The hour 10:15, having arrived, we call the House Tax Committee to order when we have a quorum. Members, we have several bills today. We'll start off with the Anderson M. bill. And we will, of course, take care of administrative things and officially call the meeting to order when we do have a quorum. So, members, we're looking at the first bill here is House File 594. Are there any amendments? Yes. Okay, we'll have to take care of it. There aren't. Let's work. Okay. Okay. Welcome, committee. Sir, if you please present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mark Anderson, bill number 594. It's actually a very simple bill. It covers one of my favorite topics, aviation. And in aviation, there's three fuels that you'll see at most airports. One is jet fuel. One is what they call 100 low lead, which is really a nice high blend of 100 octane. And the other is a form of car gas. We call it MoGas. And again, it's just like a nice clean high octane. But the problem over the last few years is that the two of the three gases, the fuels, have been taxed at basically 5%. And at 5 cents. And the proceeds of that goes into the aviation fund. Now, for years, this MoGas has been left out, that fuel has been taxed at 28.5 cents per gallon, and that's been going into the highway fund. And what this bill would do is take the gas that's currently called MoGas and put the proceeds to that in the same category as the rest of the aviation fuels, and it would go to, would be dedicated to the aviation fund. That's the bill in a nutshell.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. You have a testifier. Would you like to have the testifier offer testimony at this time?
Yes, I would, Mr. Chair.
Hi, my name is Glenn Burke. I'm the airport manager for the city of South St. Paul and also a member of the Minnesota Council of Airports. We're here in support of the bill. We would like to see that the MoGas tax just be taxed at the rate that all aviation fuels are taxed at 5 cents. Currently, it's taxed as a road fuel, and those taxes go into the road fund, the state highway fund. We're also concerned that the EPA was sued to get rid of 100 low lead, and the FAA right now is testing several replacement fuels, which are likely to be a derivative of a road fuel. So our current rules would have any replacement fuel, the tax at the highway fund rate, and not at the aviation rate.
Thank you, Mr. Burke. Representative Anderson, do you have any other testifiers that you'd like to bring up?
No, Mr. Chair.
Very well, then. Representative Petersburg has a question.
Yeah, thank you. I just want to clarify. I think a lot of this has stemmed from the fact that the federal government has started to wean away and actually have in law that the 100% low lead will be discontinued after a certain period of time, thus making this MoGas, as you said, more prevalent and larger volumes of it being used. Is that my correction? I mean, am I correct in that?
Mr. Burke, Representative Anderson.
Hey, Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, that is correct. As presented, the environmentalists are going after this 100 low lead. It is a leaded gas, and it's one of the few, it might be the only remaining leaded gas that's out there. And what the FAA is doing is working on a formula for a better, a higher octane gas without the lead. So they'll be slowly, as you say, weaning off the 100 low lead and developing a new fuel. But in the meantime, more and more airplanes can get what we call an STC. That allows single engine airplanes that are burning 100 low lead now to use this what we call MoGas.
Thank you.
Representative Petersburg, follow-up.
Just a quick follow-up. Do you have an estimation about how much, how many gallons of low lead is being used right now that will be converted to this other fuels?
Representative Anderson, Mr. Burke.
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, according to the figures that I have, the sales for 2014, there was 2.7 million gallons of 100 low lead sold in Minnesota, and only 6 to 7% of that was the MoGas.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We do have a quorum now, so I will officially call the meeting to order. And if we could take care of some housekeeping business to begin with. We have minutes to approve from our previous meeting. That would be the meeting of March 11th. And I think it's been our custom to have Representative Simonson approve the meeting's minutes, if he would.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Simonson. Any corrections or additions to the meeting minutes of March 11th? Hearing none, all those in favor of approval signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those against, same sign. The motion is approved and the minutes are adopted. And then also, I don't think we've actually moved the bill, so the chair will move House File 594 for possible inclusion in an omnibus tax bill. Members, any other questions? Anyone in the audience who would like to testify in favor of the bill or would have concerns about the bill? Hearing and seeing none, the chair renews the motion for House File 594 to be included in a tax omnibus bill. Thank you, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members.
Next bill on the agenda is House File 496. Welcome to the committee, Representative Nornes. And would anyone like to move House File 496 for possible inclusion? Representative Sarah Anderson moves House File 496. Representative Nornes, welcome to the committee, and proceed with your testimony.
I have to report a defective chair. Make a note of that.
I'm sorry, Representative Nornes, I didn't hear that.
There's a defective chair here that don't want anybody to be hurt.
You mean
so.
Furniture and not the presiding officer?
Oh, yeah. Better clarify that.
That's actually what I thought you were referring to.
You want a roll call on that?
A replacement chair. No, I've got a loose arm on my chair, that's all. I'm sorry.
Very good. So, no.
I hope that doesn't do anything to, you know, cast a shadow over the committee. So
no, I don't think so, Representative Norris. We will make sure we include that in the minutes of this meeting today, though.
Very good. I appreciate hearing our bill, House File 496. And did someone officially move that?
Yes, Representative Anderson has moved House File 496.
Thank you very much for doing that. Today we're, again, trying to help our resort industry a little bit. We can't change the weather. We can't change their season. Can't lengthen it. But we can help them to improve their facilities. So House File 496 briefly provides a sales tax exemption for construction materials and supplies and equipment as they improve their existing structures. This applies to resorts, to private or public campgrounds as well. And I think to move the testimony along, we have Dan McElroy today with us, and also we have Joel Carlson to testify.
Very good. So, Mr. McElroy, would you like to begin?
Thank you. Mr. Chairman and members, for the record, my name is Dan McElroy. I'm Executive Vice President of the Minnesota Resort and Campground Association. We have about 340 members, resorts and campgrounds across the state. We appreciate the opportunity to talk about this bill. This is not a new concept. Charlene Chesky had this in her omnibus bill 2 years ago. It's been a long discussion as to whether the capital inputs in the resort and campground industry, which are the building materials that allow us to build campgrounds and shower houses and recreation buildings and buildings used by our guests, to create a taxable product. Virtually 100% of the things sold by my members, except an occasional t-shirt, are subject to the sales tax. This is a good-sized industry, although it's much smaller than it was at one time. best data we have is a 1975 report by the University of Minnesota Extension Service that claimed at that time we had about 2,700 resorts. When I started with the Resort and Campground Association about 5 years ago, we estimated there were 850 resorts, and a recent estimate is 810 resorts. And these are important because they're part of not only vacations for our citizens and our neighbors and tourists, they're important to restaurants and gas stations and gift shops and golf courses and you know, all sorts of things in resort communities across the state. And they're part of our brand as the land of 10,000 lakes or sky blue waters. And they also provide access to lakes for a large number of people. As we have fewer resorts, a typical resort that has 20 cabins, may have 150 or 200 families get access to Minnesota's Great Lake Vacation, where if the resort is changed over to being cabins, each one has one family that may have access to the lake. And so we make an economic development and a brand argument, but there's also a very strong tax argument. Manufacturers and others who create a taxable product are not expected to pay sales tax on taxable inputs, including machinery. And so we think it is a logical extension that resorts and campgrounds would be exempt from paying sales tax on building materials. We drafted this to be relatively narrow and only applied it to renovation, remodeling, and improvements to cabins and other buildings used by guests. Doesn't apply to a homestead. It doesn't apply to garages, machine sheds, service buildings, laundries. It only applies to buildings used by our guests. We need to make these investments to be competitive. Our resorts compete with other vacation options and with resorts in other states. And resorts built in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and even the 80s don't have the amenities in terms of larger and nicer bathrooms, larger and nicer kitchens, air conditions and ceiling fans and porches and things that guests want, and that we need to compete with the resorts in other states, Wisconsin, Upper Michigan, upstate New York, a variety of other places. So this is important economic development policy, and it's consistent with how we treat other businesses that create a taxable product. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. McElroy. Mr. Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Joel Carlson, and I'm here on behalf of the Congress of Minnesota Resorts, and I appreciate everything that Mr. McElroy has presented to the committee. I just want to just give you, just to amplify that just a little bit more. The members of our association are generally, they live at their resort. They used to call them mom-pa resorts, but they live at their resorts. That's what they do, and when you go there, they sell you the bait, they provide the hospitality, they take you fishing, and it really is a way of life for them, and they love doing it. But it is an industry that's in decline. And the numbers that that Mr. McElroy mentioned are even more graphic just since the time we've been working on this bill. And my secretary hates it, but I save paper. And I have my fiscal note when we heard this bill on February 27th of 2001. And the fiscal note in 2001 said we had 1,125 resorts in Minnesota. If you read the fiscal note today, you'll see that the Department of Revenue indicates that we have about 820. We've been losing, since we've been trying to talk with you about this issue, we've been losing about 24 resorts a year. And the problem with that is that once a resort is sold for private development, it never comes back. And that is what really takes away your constituents' access to the great resources that we have in Minnesota. And the reason for that decline is very simple. When the value of your property becomes greater than the value of your going concern business, you're forced into that economic decision. With a 10, 11, 12-week season, it's very hard to be in the seasonal resorting business. This is an opportunity to help them invest in their properties, help Minnesotans have that family vacation memory that so many of us have had, and we would appreciate your support or consideration as you assemble your omnibus bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. Any member questions at this point? Representative Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was going to indicate to you that if you didn't look at the property tax bill I introduced, it would include the pieces that you're talking about, and you should get in back of that because that would be a much greater impact for those properties than what you're trying to do here with this. And if you don't know about that, Joel is indicating that he does. So you can talk to him about that. Thank you.
Any comments on that, Mr. Carlson?
Mr. Chairman and members, going back to Chair David's first run at the Tax Committee, Chair Lincheski, going back to Chair Abrams, this committee has been very sensitive to the resort property tax issue, and they developed a tiered system for resort property taxes. The big reform in 2001 does impact them, and, yeah, and Representative Earhart's bill does address that. And but the committee has recognized that the increasing value of Lakeshore, which drives the value of resorts, needs to be reflected in the tax code, and you've done that, and we appreciate it very much. But this would be additional help as well.
Thank you very much. Representative Loeffler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And looking at the bill, I don't note that there's any kind of commitment on the part of the person who's getting this tax benefit to stay in the resort business. And, you know, you've noted, well, all the testifiers have noted how this is really a declining industry for a variety of reasons in Minnesota, from 1,100 apparently to 800 some now. And, you know, what is going to prevent, you know, 200 or 300 of these resort owners from using this tax break just to fix it up so they can get a better value when they sell it off as individual cabins?
Who would like to take that? Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Loeffler, that's a very good point. And prior permutations of this bill have included some type of clawback provision so that from the year you get the some type of exemption that there would be, if you sell it within a year, they can get that money back. We're certainly willing to look at those kinds of protections so that we're just not fixing up our resort to sell it off for private use. That's a valid concern, and I think there are ways to address that. I know even the realtors had talked to me about making sure if they do that, that they're aware of it. So if there is a sale, they know what their obligations are. It's something that we're aware of and could be addressed.
Representative Loeffler, follow up.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we should have definitely more than a one-year clawback, because that's almost nothing. Just allows you to get a big chunk of depreciation on the improvements you've just made against your taxes, I think. But, you know, if this is really to preserve an industry and affordable vacations for Minnesotans, then we ought to tie it much more tightly to a longer-term commitment to that community and its economic vitality and the benefits that it would provide to others than just the owner.
All right.
Mr. Chairman and
Mr. Carlson,
we're certainly willing to entertain that. And I think when we had this in the bill previously, I think it was a three-year clawback is what I recall.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Loeffler,
Mr. McElroy.
It was a three-year clawback in 2013. And we think that's reasonable. I agree with Mr. Carlson. Our members would support that as well.
Very good. Anything else?
No, thank you.
Representative Dabney?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm as a guy who grew up as a kid going to Leech Lake for a week or when life was good, 2 weeks every summer, I'm sensitive to the challenges of your industry. But I'm not clear what the challenges are that are yielding the decrease in the number of the mom-and-pop resorts in particular. I mean, clearly it's no longer a seasonal issue, because the tourism industry when I was a kid was Labor Day to Memorial Day, or whichever comes first. It's not anymore. It's a year-round industry. So what are the challenges?
Mr.
Chairman, Representative Dabney, it isn't as year-round as we wish it was. The vast majority of the revenue is in the 10 weeks from mid-June to Labor Day. We get some weekend business in May, early June, and October. We have a handful of members that are open in the winter, but it is a relatively small portion of the business. The challenge is meeting the expectations of guests with facilities that in many cases were built quite a long time ago. And the investment in better air conditioning, nicer bathrooms, more up-to-date kitchens, flat-screen televisions, a variety of other things that people want, and adding bandwidth to resorts is also an issue outside of the purview of this bill. There are good news. There are new recreational pursuits that people enjoy, like bike riding and walking on our trails and bird watching and a variety of other things, to some extent are replacing some of the lost interest in fishing. We aren't as many fishing resorts and more family vacation resorts, which is a very good thing. But it is about competing for the interest of changing demographic. Many of our resorters today, or our resort guests, are multi-generation families. As people my age and older continue to age, we have to be able to appeal to younger guests. That means better facilities.
I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dabney. Any other questions from committee members? Seeing or hearing none, anyone from the audience who would like to testify in favor of or with concerns about this bill? Seeing or hearing none, any closing comments? Representative Nornes.
Mr. Chair, I thank again the committee for the time allotted to us this morning. Okay. I agree with the testifiers that today's consumers have a little higher expectations when they go on vacation than maybe they did or the generation before. I remember a resort that I was at where I was sure the toilet was going to fall through the floor, and that's an uncomfortable feeling. So we need to make sure that our guests are well taken care of and that they return year after year. So I hope the committee looks at this favorably, House File 496.
Thank you very much, Representative Nornes. And the Representative Anderson renews your motion that House File 496 for possible inclusion in the tax omnibus bill. And to your point earlier, Representative Nornes, we will be fixing the chair right now.
Okay, a little super glue. That's all you need.
Okay, House File 1363, Representative Franson, if you could please join us. Representative McDonald moves House File 1363, and Representative Franson will be for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Do we have an amendment? Why don't we? Okay, let's hand out the amendment, and then let's take a look at that, and let's add that. Why don't you, if you could, Representative Franson, please just start to describe the bill, and I'm going to interrupt you when everybody has the amendments had a chance to look at it.
Sure.
Representative Franson.
Thank you, members, and Mr. Chair, in front of you, you have a fine piece of legislation. What House File 1363 does is Minnesota Statute Section 297F.08, Subsection 9, requires that licensed cigarette wholesalers affix the state cigarette tax stamp by the use of a stamping machine. Licensed wholesalers act as an agent for the state by leasing or purchasing a cigarette stamping machine, employing at least two employees to operate the machine, and reimbursing the state for the cost of printing cigarette tax stamps. I took a tour of Henry's Foods, a wholesaler in my district in Alexandria, and I can assure you members that stamping cigarettes is a complex and expensive process given the machine and labor requirements. Currently, 48 states pay a cigarette stamping allowance to wholesalers. Minnesota's cigarette stamping allowance was repealed in 2003 as a budget balancing measure. Wholesalers incur approximately $2.3 million in costs and expenses to stamp cigarettes for the state. This includes the machine purchase or rental, machine maintenance, two full-time salaried workers, and reimbursing the state for the cost of printing the actual tax stamps. For fiscal year 2014, wholesalers collected and remitted to the state $458 million in cigarette taxes, which, according to the Department of Revenue, is about 7% or $32 million greater than budgeted cigarette tax revenue. Fairness requires that wholesalers be compensated for the expenses they incur to stamp cigarettes for the state. The cigarette stamping allowance was repealed in a time of budget deficits, and we would now reinstate it during this time of budget surplus. The Minnesota Lottery pays retailers a 5.5% commission on each lottery ticket sold, plus a 1% commission on paid winning tickets.
In fiscal year 2014, the lottery contributed $127 million to state programs and paid $32 million in commissions to lottery retailers. And finally, a 45% stamping allowance is equal to 1.3 cents per pack on a state tax of $2.90 per pack, or about $2.2 million in a stamping allowance reimbursement to wholesalers as shown by the Department Revenue Analysis.
Thank you, Representative Franz, and we have a couple folks to testify on the bill. Is there anyone in the audience that wishes to testify on behalf of House File 1363 as we'll be amending it? Is there anyone that wishes to testify with concerns on the bill? Okay. I do believe the department wishes to make a few comments. If they don't make it by the time we're done with this bill, we will let them come and make a few comments on the bill. I believe Mr. Cummings is working on some issues over in the other lower body. Okay.
I do have a couple of testifiers on behalf of this bill.
Wonderful. And we will get right to them after Representative McDonald moves the A15-0206 amendment. I believe that's the author's amendment.
That is correct.
Any questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. We now have the bill as amended in the order the author would like. So if you please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Thomas Bryant. I'm the executive director of the Minnesota Wholesale Marketers Association, a trade association of tobacco wholesalers here in the state. I'm just going to briefly explain the A1 so you understand that, and then Dale Erickson of Henry's Foods, a wholesaler from Alexandria, would like to testify about their company's costs related to stamping cigarettes. The A1 amendment responds to a question that was raised yesterday by the Department of Revenue. And they had a concern about the shipping costs that wholesalers currently pay. Their question or concern was, if the department now pays the shipping costs under 1363, does then the department have the liability if the stamps are lost in shipment by UPS? There's been a couple instances over the past 5 or 6 years where a box of cigarette stamps have been lost by UPS. So A1 just continues the status quo, the current law, to require wholesalers to pay the shipping costs, and then they would be liable for the value of the stamps from the time they leave the dock at the Department of Revenue building in St. Paul to the time they're delivered to their warehouse. So wholesalers would remain responsible and liable for those stamps. So it maintains the status quo.
Please state your name and who represents the record, please, sir.
Thank you. My name is Dale Erickson. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, as I stated, my name is Dale Erickson. I'm the general manager of Henry's Foods, a wholesale distributor company located in Alexandria that sells snacks, beverages, candy, food items, and tobacco products to retailers. We brought our concerns about the need to reinstate a cigarette stamping allowance to Representative Franson and would appreciate your support of this bill. As Representative Franson indicated, wholesalers incur significant costs to comply with the state's requirement that cigarette stamps be affixed to each pack of cigarettes. While each wholesaler's cost will vary, Henry's Foods incurs the following costs to stamp cigarettes. We purchased our cigarette stamping machine for $109,000. To ensure that we can keep the machine running, we stock about $10,000 in machine parts at our warehouse. We also pay $2,610 a year to the machine manufacturer for a maintenance and service contract to cover service calls and repairs to the stamping machine. In addition, we have two full-time employees whose job is to stamp cigarettes every day. Their wages and benefits add up to $78,000 per year. The software to make the machine operate was $9,000. And we also pay an annual software support fee for it of $8,000. We also have warehouse space dedicated to the stamping machine and incur utility costs to operate the machine. Finally, we also reimburse the state for the cost of printing and the tax stamps. In short, not including the purchase price of our stamping machine, Henry's Foods incurs more than $100,000 a year in software expenses and direct costs to stamp cigarettes for the state of Minnesota. On behalf of all the wholesalers in Minnesota, we are only asking that we be reimbursed for the costs we incur to stamp cigarettes for the state. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
Thank you, Mr. Erickson. Questions? Let's get the rest of the testimony, and then we'll go to questions from members. I have McDonald and Petersburg at this point. Mr. Cummings, would you have a few comments on this bill? Please state your name and who represents the record, please, sir.
Mr. Chair, my name is Paul Cummings, and I'm the Tax Policy Manager at the Minnesota Department of Revenue.
Welcome to the committee.
From what I understand, there was an amendment put on the bill this morning.
That is correct, Mr. Cummings. It's the 206 amendment. Maybe someone could get that to Mr. Cummings.
Yes. So, Mr. Chair, I think one of the things that we had brought up to Mr. Bryant and Representative Franson was just we were trying to think about the liability. You know, these, and in terms of when they're being shipped. And I know that we have various things that we're thinking about, and we're continuing to think about it with the language and then the amended language. We wanted to thank Mr. Bryant and thank Representative Franson for sort of working through this. We're going to continue to work through this. So I just wanted to thank them for the amendment. I wanted you to know that we're sort of thinking about the liability of stamps. Some of these stamps are a little expensive. So getting lost in the mail is not quite acceptable. So we just want to make sure that we're thinking through this, and we are. So, but this is something that we'll continue to work on with you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Franson and Mr. Bryant, if this bill is a priority of this committee.
Okay, thank you.
Otherwise, the bill is administrable. I did want to put that on the record, but the point in which we're coming to talk about it is alive.
So you're not really a resource today. You're kind of a good resource.
Well, I would hope
you're always a good resource.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes. Okay, I have McDonald, Petersburg, Barrett, and Simonson for questions. So maybe, Mr. Cummings, you could stick around a little bit here, too, like get everybody up there. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the testifier with Henry's Foods. Just when you purchase the equipment and or maintenance or any other items that are associated with putting the stamp on that the state of Minnesota by law requires you to do, are you tax exempt from any of that material, supplies, etc.?
Mr. Bryant.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. I'm going to answer that best I can. It's no.
Okay. Where's Jim McDonald?
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. So, in you're obviously helping the state collect a sales tax so we can run important programs down here. I'm in favor of the bill, by the way, just to let you know. I think that based upon the cost that you have, I think there should be some kind of a fair solution that offers you a financial benefit as helping the state collect tax. I think that's only a fair solution, a fair idea, so I support that. But no other exemptions whatsoever that you are aware of that allows you to perform to help the state collect the tax.
Mr. Chairman, committee, no.
Representative McDonald?
All right, that's good. Thank you.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to Mr. Erickson, it sounds like from what your testimony was that you are indeed a wholesaler, so you do supply cigarettes to a large group of stores and so forth, and it sounds like it's quite a large operation. And just out of curiosity, I was curious as to how many packs of cigarettes, either daily, weekly, or so, that your company actually sells or distributes to other stores.
Mr. Erickson?
Mr. Chairman and committee, Henry's Foods stamps approximately 21,580 cartons of cigarettes per week.
Representative Petersburg? Representative Barrett?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I did have a question for Mr. Cummings, but he actually answered. I was wondering about same thing you had an answer to, whether it was administrable. You said it was, so thank you very much.
Thank you, Vice Chair Barrett. Representative Simonson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My first question is for Mr. Cummings, and as he's making his way forward. So if we pass this bill, or if it gets signed into law by the governor, is the state essentially going to be offering at least what I would say more of a subsidy under this bill, or less of a subsidy?
Mr. Cummings?
Mr. Chair, I think And maybe Mr. Michael could talk about this, but the revenue estimate is showing that there would be a revenue loss to the state, which would mean that there would be probably a greater subsidy to the individuals who are administering this tax, this trust tax.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Cummings. To you, Mr. Chair, perhaps the author, I see that this bill had its first read and came to here to taxes, but are you at all concerned that perhaps this bill should be in front of the Commerce Committee? To either of you?
Simonson, which part of the bill are you looking at that would be commerce? Because it's pretty much taxes, tax stamps.
Correct, Mr. Chair. And I'm just thinking about, as the state gets involved in commerce and the sale of these products, if there's a question here, and I'm not suggesting that there is a need to go to commerce. I'm just simply asking if you think that there is.
I don't think there is, but I'll tell you what I'll do, Representative Simonson. I will talk to Chair Hoppe and I will talk to Chair Garofalo also, because the Commerce Committee is a policy committee only, and their finances are run through, it's got some long name, Chair Garofalo is the chair of it, something, Jobs Committee. So I will do that, and I'll report back to you if that's okay. I don't, sure. As I read through this, I don't really see it, but I could be missing something. I'll see if they want to see it, and I'll let you know on that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We could talk more offline on that, too. And my final two questions for Mr. Erickson. So we just heard from the great resource that essentially if we pass this bill, this will be a greater subsidy from the state of Minnesota to the distributors. And just tell me, in your own words, why would the state, further subsidize the business of selling cigarettes?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Simonson, I guess my answer to that would be is that just trying to, we collect a lot of tax for the state of Minnesota, and we incur a tremendous amount of expense for it. And I guess, we're looking for fair taxes. We look at some things such as lottery, et cetera, where the state provides all the equipment and the state pays them to sell every ticket, et cetera, et cetera. And we incur all of the costs and get no help from the state. And it's a tremendous amount of money for a business. I mean, it costs us over $100,000 a year to collect this money for the state. And that's still, and we're probably on a machine that's 8-9 years old now. So we're looking at incurring another probably $110,000 cost to replace our machine. They don't last forever. So we do have a tremendous amount of cost to collect the, 400 and some thousand, it was $458 million in taxes that we collect as distributors for the state of Minnesota.
And Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Erickson, for that. And I'll just wrap up with a comment, because I don't want to belabor this point, as we've already discussed it at length here in this committee. But I think the state of Minnesota is making tremendous steps and strides forward in reducing its tobacco use, especially among kids. And we've heard that testimony here already this year, Mr. Chair. So I would just advise you that if you retain this bill in your possession and you consider it for the omnibus bill, that you take that into consideration and make sure that we don't do something more to encourage folks to continue to smoke cigarettes. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Simonson. The gentleman from Lyon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just kind of just a general question from a wholesale standpoint when it comes to the stamping. It's my understanding that each individual retailer has their own stamp. No, there is a single stamp from a wholesale level that is done. Okay.
Mr. Erickson.
Mr. Chairman and committee members, the stamps are provided to us as all distributors from the state of Minnesota, and they all have an individual number on them, so
that's
they can
I,
be
okay.
tracked. So you could tell if because of the stamps that Henry's Foods buy, if there's a problem at an account, you would know by that tax stamp that came from my warehouse. Versus if there's a different number on it, it may have came from McLean's warehouse or Holiday's warehouse or somebody else. You'd be able to tell them. We do have our own number, but it's only by the purchase of the product. Whatever you send us has a number on them from 1 to 1 million here, The next guy gets $1 million to $2 million. I mean, that, as you're buying them.
A gentleman from Lyon.
So just to kind of be clear, so say Holiday Station Stores would be a larger retailer. They would have their own numbers because they do their own stamping. But if you're a mom-and-pop grocery store, they would be underneath your license.
Mr.
Chairman and committee, yes, the Holiday is not a stamper either. So Holiday purchases their through a company called McLean.
McLean, okay.
And they would be just exactly like us. They're okay. Stamping cigarettes and collecting the tax for the state of Minnesota.
All right, thank you.
Yeah. Okay, Vice Chair Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm curious about the costs, $109,000 in capital equipment that you have invested, use that term loosely, in having to collect taxes. Question for staff, possibly, as it relates to any sales tax. Do they pay, do you know, Mr. Michael, if they would pay sales tax on that capital equipment, or is there some kind of exemption related to capital equipment as it relates to this?
Mr. Michael?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Barrett, that the purchase of that machine would be subject to sales tax because they're not, this is not, they don't qualify for the manufacturing exemption for capital equipment or something like that. So, yes, it would be subject to sales tax.
Vice Chair Barrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that might be some additional work that we might want to do, Representative France might want to do because of the huge cost involved here, regardless of the type of product they're selling. They do have a huge cost and a further cost as it relates to a tax they're paying on a piece of equipment that's necessary to recover or collect sales tax on behalf of the state of Minnesota. So I just wanted to mention that.
Thank you, Vice Chair Barrett. Representative Franz, and you had a comment?
Regarding the so-called subsidy, you know, yes, we have cigarettes in the state of Minnesota, but it is at this time a legal product. A legal product that the state of Minnesota demands that we collect a tax on. So until that is eliminated from the state of Minnesota and cigarette smoking is completely illegal, and at that point we would be, at this current time, be missing out on $458 million of tax revenue. So picture the budget without that money, and where would you cut $458 million from? We're simply asking for just a minuscule allowance, just something that the state is requiring the manufacturers to do, the wholesalers to do, just something to compensate for their efforts. And $2.2 million out of the general fund, or $458 million out of the general fund.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, my question was similar to Representative Barrett's, and it was to Mr. Michaels regarding that sales tax exemption. You know, as you recall, I had a bill that would offer the restaurants a sales tax exemption on capital improvements, which manufactures something. Now, the state has had a history of giving a discount or a tax exemption to companies that produce something and then tax it as an incentive. So, Mr. Michael, is it out of the question to perhaps suggest that the stamp machines that they purchase produce and manufacture a stamp in which is on a product that is then sold and collected sales tax? Would that be a crazy thought, or not even to be considered, that they're actually manufacturing a stamp on a product that then is sold?
Mr. Michael, is that crazy?
Mr. Chairman, essentially what the machine does is to apply a stamp to a pack of cigarettes. I suppose you could, you know, I guess I wouldn't get into characterizing mental health, but that, you know, essentially you end up with a product that's got, you know, something else on it. If you were talking about a normal manufacturing process where you buy one component and another component and assemble them, yes, that's standard manufacturing. Here you've got a pack of cigarettes and a stamp, and you're combining them. I think, you know, it would not be out of the ordinary, totally out of, you know, literal terminology to say that's manufacturing something. I think that's not generally the way current law is read, obviously, and so there isn't an exemption. But if you wanted to provide an exemption, the clear way to do that would be to amend the law and explicitly provide that this kind of capital equipment is exempt, and if that's what you want to do, that's what you should do.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Michael. Well, it's just good food for thought. I think the state has shown history year after year that we have helped businesses that has helped the state generate income. So I think it's a fair thing to suggest such a good bill that would offer an exemption, at least on the tax that they have to purchase their capital improvement, their equipment. So it's just we have done it in the past, and just throw that out there.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure who to ask this question about because I'm still a little unclear about the parameters of the value of this stamping process itself. But can anybody tell me if there is any benefit or value to the retailer wholesaler for putting these stamps on cigarettes?
Mr. Cummings, other than the fact you couldn't sell them if you didn't have it on there.
Right.
Mr. Chair, I think I'll, we can let the wholesaler speak, but, it is a business, obviously, and so submitting the tax is a part of a business model, and I know that they're trying to work within, trying to find a profit within a business model, but paying the tax is part of the cost of doing business in this area. Now, I understand that there's the proposal is outlining a different policy, in terms of trying to provide some reimbursement to the wholesalers for submitting this tax.
Mr. Erickson, any thoughts to the Petersburg question?
Yes, Mr. Chairman and committee. I think the biggest benefit of the fixing the tax stamp is that we have some control of where they're coming from. And we stamp in five states currently, Iowa, Minnesota, South Dakota, North Dakota, and Wisconsin. And North Dakota does not require a tax stamp, even though they still have a $4.40 per carton tax that we pay to the state of North Dakota for any cigarettes we sell in North Dakota, but we do not affix an actual tax stamp. So if you go into North Dakota, you're going to find cigarettes without any tax stamp on them. And so your question is the value of the stamp? To me, it's the tracking. I think we would have a severe problem of bootlegging cigarettes in if there was no tax stamp, because then you'd have no idea where they're coming from. And we have that, that's why it's nice now, because of the real disparity in the taxes between the states that surround Minnesota. It's hard for them to go and buy them in North Dakota at a much less price, bring them into Minnesota and sell them, because there's no tax stamp on them. So they can be caught and prosecuted for that.
Representative Petersburg.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I was really referring to whether or not it adds any value to the sales or whatever of cigarettes to the wholesaler or the retailer, and if in reality this tax stamp is more of an issue for the state and the regulation of the state than it is to the retailer. And so therefore, why are we asking wholesale and retailers to cover all the cost of that when the real benefit is to the state and the regulation and determination of who is might be pirating and bootlegging and so forth the cigarettes? It seems to me that that's more of a state expectation or requirement than is a wholesaler or retailer. And so therefore the question that I generally would ask is, why are we then making you do our work and having you pay for it when it's something that is really part of the cost of our regulation and taxing system? And that was a question as to whether or not it's a real value or benefit to the retailer wholesaler, because you could get the same dollar value from the cigarettes whether they had a tax stamp on it or not. And so that was the premise of my question. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Peters. Progressive Earhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Does not the liquor industry have a similar situation?
Mr. Cummings?
There are various, I'm not sure in terms of if they have a stamp on liquor. I know that there used to be something that was affixed to the top, and now I don't think they do, but I'm not sure about that. Mr. Michael might know.
Mr. Michael?
Under Minnesota law, we do not have any. There's no stamping, and I don't believe under federal law that there is anymore. As Mr. Cummings indicated, in the past, for I think distilled spirits were subject to a federal excise tax that required affixing a seal kind of a thing, but that's gone. They do have to affix seals to, you know, ship bonded shipments and warehouses and so forth, but not. That's just to keep the integrity of the control of the product that's involved.
Representative Earhart. Okay, anyone else wish to testify from the audience? Some closing comments. We'll go to Mr. Cummings and then Representative Franz. Mr. Cummings.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in terms of just the cigarette stamp, I just wanted to say, you know, we had talked to this committee about smuggling, and I know that that was brought up, and the cigarette stamp is actually very helpful in cutting down the amount of untaxed product that is out there. So that is actually a benefit to the retailers as well. If there's a marketplace in which everyone is expected to pay the tax out there, and we're finding that we have not seen cigarette stamps that are being made up, or you know, there's phony stamps that are made up. This creates a level playing field for the marketplace out there in terms of these stamps. Where we're seeing some of the smuggling activity, or maybe the products on shelves that are not taxed, is the point that of tobacco. And tobacco is something that is unstamped. Now, again, the reason why cigarettes are stamped and tobacco is unstamped is that tobacco comes in all different shapes and sizes, and it would be very difficult for those stamps to be affixed. But I just wanted to note that there, you know, there is a benefit if we do have varying tax rates. You know, these cigarette stamps help to make sure that things that are on the shelf, product that is on the shelf, is stamped, and then there's an even playing field across the state so that everyone is selling taxed product. And that allows there to be an even playing field amongst those that are having the tax and those that maybe don't have a tax stamp, so that there is some helpfulness to the marketplace in having the stamp if there's going to be a high tax rate or any type of tax rate on cigarettes.
Thank you, Mr. Cummings. Some closing comments from Representative Franzen.
Well, members, and Mr. Chair, thank you for your time. But just remember that this at one time used to be law. It was repealed when there was some deficits. And so I'm just asking that we bring a little bit of fairness back into the wholesale business.
Thank you, Representative Franzen. Representative McDonald renews his motion that House File 1363 as amended be later for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Franzen, Mr. Erickson, Mr. Brandt, and Mr. Cummings. Okay, item next. Is there any preference here? First of all, on the Swedzinski bill or the Earhart bill, is there anyone that traveled for more than 50 miles?
Yes.
Well, then we better go with you first. Representative Swids, the gentleman from Lyon moves House File 122. If you could please, is there anyone that wishes to testify on behalf of this bill? And just so I can kind of get an idea here, is there anyone who wishes to testify with concerns to the bill? Mr. Cummings from the department, do you wish to testify on this bill? Okay. Okay, the gentleman from Lyon moves House File 122. Are there any amendments? Seeing
yes,
there is. The gentleman from Lyon moves H0122A1 amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Now we have the bill in the shape the author would like. Please present your bill, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. The amendment that we just passed was just some clarification language on enforcement. Because the bill is retroactive in nature, this gives us a collection ability to go back and reimburse some of the local entities with the good fortune if this bill is to move forward. House File 122 it just simply expands the existing motor vehicle sales tax exemptions that townships currently have and moves it also to the counties and also to cities. And that would be primarily for road maintenance vehicles, so snow plows, dump trucks, vehicles that would be currently underneath that. This does not include regular vehicles, so cars, trucks, vans, that type of thing. It would be simply pertaining to road maintenance vehicles. And with that, I have City Administrator from Marshall, Minnesota, Ben Martig, and I also have Laura Ziegler here with the League of Minnesota Cities to speak on behalf of this bill. And so the reason I appointed Mr. Chair earlier wasn't simply talking to myself that drove over 50 miles, but it would be the good people from Marshall, which is in Lyon County, travel to the Capitol today. So thank you.
And thank you for doing that. How are the Marshall Tigers doing?
We're doing well. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We're doing very well, and I'm working on getting that Tiger ball cap for you.
I don't have one yet.
Right. I'm working on it.
Okay, and I will pay you for it.
It's under $4 or $5.
Okay. With that, if you could please state your name and who you represent for the record, please, or ma'am, or sir, or who wants to go first. Okay. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Laura Ziegler. I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. Here today on behalf of our 832 member cities in support of House File 122, we want to thank Representative Swazinski for his support and for authoring the bill. As he nicely laid out, it's fairly straightforward. So just to reiterate, we're looking to create the exemption for cities and counties that is already afforded to the townships, and we feel this is a very important policy issue for our members. So thank you for your time today. And with that, Mr. Chair, if I may, I'd like to turn it over to Ben Martig.
Okay, yes, and please, could you spell your last name, sir?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Ben Martig, M as in Mary, A-R-T-I-G.
Okay, welcome to the committee, sir.
Thank you. I have a little handout there, the Spot the Difference picture game, if you've ever done that, to try and see the differences in the images. And I'll jump right to the relevant one for the tax hearing today, and that is that the city logo is on one of these pieces of equipment, but not on the other, with a tax difference of about $8,700 if you're looking at a township buying it versus a city. So again, this we're really looking at this as an equity issue. We would like to be treated the same with local governments as well as the state of Minnesota. 75% of our cities, or excuse me, 75% of the streets in the city of Marshall are local streets that the state does not provide any funding assistance with, and that's what these vehicles are primarily driving on while we're maintaining those. And just this week, the city council approved the purchase of almost $500,000 worth of equipment that would be directly related to the motor vehicle tax that would be exempted under this, and so that translates to about $30,000. That can really help us out here in Marshall, Minnesota. So I really also look at this as a tax relief opportunity, and it's going to impact communities across the state of Minnesota as well. So we aren't probably talking huge dollars as far as the state impact with that, but certainly makes a difference to us locally and allows us to try and improve our aging infrastructure within our community. So thank you very much. This is we do have bipartisan support. The House is, Senator Kunin's carrying this on the House, so certainly would appreciate your support in House File 122. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Martig. Who do you have, who's favorite tonight, Marshall or Hutchinson to go to the state? Girls basketball.
Well, I don't know. We need to really ask that question. In the, you know, as far as the odds go, I'm not 100% sure, but we certainly are feeling confident. So,
okay, I'll be watching.
All right.
Okay. Okay, with that, questions for members? I think it's a pretty straightforward bill. I think we all know what it would do. Anyone from the audience wish to testify on this bill? Okay, thank you, Ms. Ziegler, and thank you, Mr. Martig. The gentleman from Lyon moves that House File 122 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill, and that bill is as amended. 122 as amended. Thank you, the gentleman from Lyon, and thank you again to the witnesses. Item last for today's agenda, Representative Earhart moves House File 1367, and there is an amendment. Chair Earhart moves the H1367A1 amendment. Any discussion? Hearing none, all fairs say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. We now have the bill as amended in the shape the author prefers. Two-year bill. First of all, do we have some, anybody wish to testify on behalf of the bill with concerns on the bill, or does the department wish to testify? Where'd Mr. Cummings go? We'll see if he comes back or not.
I sent him out of the room.
You sent him out, okay. You didn't need a resource. Thank you, Chair Hart. Two-year bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. this is an exclusion that would apply to everyone that has capital gains. More heavily it would be enjoyed by the smaller investor, smaller income, and smaller asset person than multi-giants, but they would also benefit by it. And what it does is take the amount that you have in capital gains with the federal income guidelines of combining your gains and losses, and if you have a gain, you could use that amount for a state subtraction on your state taxes. With it, however, only allows a $10,000 a year deduction. So, if you had $20,000 in gains, you could use up to $10,000 in that year. If it was $10,000 gain, you could use up to $5,000, and that's and more than that, we'll ask Ms. Nancy to describe. That's their questions.
Hey, thank you very much, Chair Hart. Are there any questions from members? Before we go to members, Mr. Cummings, do you wish to? Okay, so the department says no on this one. Not that it's they don't want it; it's just that they don't want to testify. Okay. Questions from members? Mm-hmm. Hearing none, Representative Earhart renews his motion that House File 1367 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Members, you watch your emails for Tuesday's agenda, Wednesday and Thursday. They're not out yet, but you will be seeing them shortly. Chair Lencheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a process question going forward. I know targets are going to come up pretty soon, so I suppose things will get ramped up and we'll have a lot more bills heard and a lot more late hours. But, you know, I'm just trying to track what, you know, like all members, I'm trying to figure out, you know, what's going on as far as where bills are going. And, you know, I just want to highlight that I've noticed there's a lot of re-referrals on the floor and a lot of bills moving, tax bills, from committee to committee, as it should be. Is there a way that we can know when they're actually at their last stop? I mean, so I'll give you an example. So yesterday, and this is what brought it, you know, I started thinking about it. The first bill that was moved is one of the premier bills for the new majority, House File 5. And so it's moving to another committee, but it's a tax bill. And, you know, is there going to be a way that the minority can determine, other than finding out on the floor, if some of these bills are ultimately going to make it here? So, for example, another thing, you know, I was thinking about is the House File 1, 3, and 5. Obviously, they're top bills. I mean, both, you know, all parties do that in the majority. They have their top 5 or 10 bills and their message bills and they mean things. And 3 of those 5 are tax bills and none of them have been here yet. And so I'm wondering, as we get ready for the omnibus tax bill, if your intent will be that you will have multiple tax bills moving across the floor as House File 1 and 3 and 5, or, you know, will you take all those tax provisions in those bills and put them in the omnibus tax bill? Just in planning for minority member amendments, you know, should we be getting ready for multiple days of marking up multiple forms of tax bills?
That would not be my intent. What my intent is that anything that says tax on it, it does come here. And I think that's a good tradition set by you and when you were tax chair previously, and I certainly want to follow that to a T. And if any members of this committee see anything that I have missed, please let me know right away, or let Mr. Rubis or Mr. Hasek know right away, because I'm kind of the human vacuum cleaner of tax bills. I want them all coming through the committee. Now, I haven't, you know, it'll be a decision from one pay grade higher than I, mm-hmm. as far as if some of these, what we call our, the first 5 bills, if they want to go out separately. Of course, I darn near go into cardiac arrest with just the thought of doing that, because if it has tax provision, I mean, that's the reason why we want them all in one omnibus tax bill, so we kind of have tax day, and that's tax day. We don't need every day to be tax day as far as this place goes, because you know exactly what can happen, and I don't want that to happen. So I'll continue to be watching these things as we do every day. You know, the bills have to go as far out as they can from passage and then work their way back. So we will be watching those very closely. And if you think we've missed one, please let us know. I mean, if somebody misses one, I guess they're going to know because it gets to the floor and has tax provisions, Katie bar the door. And that's we don't want to go there. So that would be my intention. Chair Lincheski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And you know, I've thought that all along. I just kind of want to bring it up. We're more than halfway through the session. We know all the other committees are going to start, you know, wrapping up shop as we hit, you know, the committee deadlines. All those committees close, and you know, just like you, I, and people before me, the whole time I've been here, this committee has not had rules, and that's what's the beautiful thing here, because everything's germane and everything can happen on the fly, and you know, I think we all like that there's no 24-hour amendment, and both parties have always followed that. But we do also know then the workload is going to start really ramping up, and so I'm just, you know, trying to plan for the minority members, kind of workload timing, and one other item on that is all the fee bills, and they're all over the place, and none of them have been here yet, and so I'm, you know, I'm just trying to get a better insight from you, Mr. Chair, as to how we should begin to prepare to hear all the fee bills as well. So.
Well, what I'll be looking at, Chair Lincheski and members, is first of all, we don't have a whole lot of bills now, but there's a whole lot of them out there that will be coming here. Mm-hmm. So we don't have a ton of them right now, but as they work their way through the process, they will be getting here. And, of course, when it comes to tax versus fee, we'll be looking at the House rules very closely as to the definition there. Is it a fee that pays for something specifically? But members, also, I do one thing a little differently than Chair Lincheski in that, didn't you, Chair Lincheski, you generally heard all bills that refer to taxes, pretty much?
Mr. Chair, I tried to. But it was kind of a different situation, and I certainly wouldn't understand if you're not going to do that. When I became chair the first time, my party had been in the minority for 8 years, and so there was a huge backlog of, you know, one side of the aisle feeling their bills had never been heard. So I think that year, the first year as chair, we broke all records for the history of the state and hearing every single bill, and about killed the nonpartisan and partisan staff on both sides of the aisle and the Department of Revenue and everyone else. But it, you know, allowed a lot of ideas that had not had a voice for 8 years to be heard. And so, you know, I tried to keep that tradition of hearing everyone, and they kind of calmed down over time. And I think since we've been, you know, flipping back and forth, majority-minority, every 2 years, it seems like both parties are getting their ideas heard, and there isn't that big of a backlog anymore. I mean, I noticed the amount of tax bill introductions are smaller than usual, although I have noticed they're about 3-1 Republican to Democrat. So, I don't know if you're going to hear every single solitary one, but I certainly tried to.
Well, you do have the record for most tax bills heard, Chair Lincheski, and I'm very competitive, but that's a record that should stand for some time. And with that being said, it's my intention to have a hearing request before we bring it up for hearing, unless I see a bill that I maybe come to a member and say, hey, Representative Simonson, let's do this. You don't have a hearing request in. I may do that, but it's not my intention to be hearing bills that we don't have hearing requests for, because members will put hearing or tax bills in for various reasons, and they may not, if they want it heard, let's get a hearing request in. So, Chair Lincheski.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because I have a bill in, and I have a hearing request in. I've had it in for 6 weeks, and I haven't had a hearing. So it's good to know what your process is. So I'll pass that on to members of the minority, that if you put in a hearing request, you'll get a hearing.
Yeah. No.
Thank you.
That's, unless it's really bad. Chair Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, when I chaired the Finance Committee, we broke the record for number of bill referrals. No, I did have the advantage. No, I mean two bill referrals to Finance, but I did have the advantage of several divisions that I could re-refer them to.
Yeah.
So,
We'll
there are different ways you can measure it in terms. I just wanted to be on the record that we had a heavy workload back in those days as well.
Yes. No, that'd be my intention. If somebody wants a bill heard, put a hearing request in. If we missed one, or just let me know. So with that, members, thank you for your work today. Good government all the time. We are adjourned.